in chapter 11 of Revelation. It says, "Then God's temple in heaven was opened, and the ark of his covenant was seen within his temple. And there were flashes of lightning, loud noises, peals of thunder, and earthquake, and heavy hail." So we sort of talked about this a little bit in our last episode, that the Ark of the Covenant, now that's in reference to the Ark of the Old Covenant, had been missing for centuries. It is said that the prophet Jeremiah hid it away, and only God knew where it was in 586 BC when the Babylonians sacked Jerusalem, destroyed the first temple. And you know, it had been looked for ever since. And really, this is what Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, that's really what it's all about, the search for the Ark of the Old Covenant. Now, what made the old ark so holy and so valuable was that God's presence was said to rest on the mercy seat on top of the ark. The ark was a box of gold, it was a box of acacia wood covered with gold. And there were depictions of angels on the top of the ark, and that formed the mercy seat, and that's where the presence of God rested in the tabernacle and in the temple when the ark was there. But it was really what was inside the ark that made it very special to the Israelites. There was, of course, a jar of the manna, the miracle bread from heaven that God used to feed his people in their wilderness journey. There was also the priestly staff of Aaron, the high priest, which sprouted. And then, of course, there was the tablets of the law, the Old Covenant, the Ten Commandments, the Word of God in stone, written in stone. And so this is why it's so fascinating to the reader in the first century when they see God's temple in heaven opened and the Ark of his covenant is there. And they're like, wow, finally, you know, there it is. But he doesn't see the ark. He sees a woman. Remember, there is no chapter and verse division in the original text. The original hearers of Revelation, the original readers of Revelation would have just read one continuous text from chapter 11 to chapter 12. So as soon as he sees the ark in God's temple in heaven, and there's all these celestial signs, an earthquake, lightning, loud noises, very similar almost to what happened on Mount Sinai when Moses went up to receive the law. And then, of course, here's what John sees, and this is Revelation 12, verse 1. "And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was with child, and she cried out in her pangs of birth, in anguish for delivery. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems upon his heads. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to bear a child, that he might devour her child when she brought it forth. She brought forth a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron." Now, remember what I said earlier about Psalm 2. That's exactly the language of Psalm 2. But it goes on to say, "Her child was caught up to God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God in which to be nourished for 1,260 days. Okay, so let's stop there just for a second. Another Old Testament passage that we need to keep in mind here with John's vision is the Ark of the Covenant, as talked about in 2 Samuel chapter 6. And when people have read this chapter, they see a lot of parallels with what happened between David and the Ark, with what happens in Luke chapter 1 with Mary. Okay, so in Luke 1, what happens there? Mary, this is the scene of the visitation. It says she arose and she went with haste into the hill country to a city of Judah. Now, what happens in 2 Samuel chapter 6? It says David arose and went with all the people who were with him. Now, what was going on here in 2 Samuel chapter 6 was that David was wanting to bring the ark to Jerusalem, the ark of the old covenant. But what had happened there was that the ark had fallen, and there was a man named Uzzah who tried to steady the ark and keep it from falling into the muck But when he did so, he was struck down by God because he wasn't permitted to touch the ark. That seems very harsh to our ears and our understanding, of course, but he was kind of zapped. And David was freaked out by this. So David basically said, how can the ark of the Lord come to me? And that's in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 9. And so David is like, wow, how can, you know, if this guy got zapped just for touching the ark, Lord knows I'm a sinner. How could I possibly bring the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem? You know, what's going to happen to me? So David does kind of a little bit of an experiment, if you will. He uses kind of a guinea pig. He brings the ark to the hill country of Judea, to the home of a guy named Obed-Edom. And he basically parks the ark there for 3 months. Just to kind of see what would happen to this guy. You know, is he going to be zapped? Is he going to die? And if nothing happens to him, then David figures it'll be safe for me to bring the ark to Jerusalem. Well, David checks back in with this guy 3 months later, and not only is he still alive, but he has been blessed abundantly. So David says, okay, now it seems safe. I can joyfully now bring the ark with me back to Jerusalem. And so he does that. And as he's processing with the ark back to Jerusalem, he starts dancing in front of the ark. And David's wife, Michal, looks out the window, and she is really disappointed to see David, quote-unquote, embarrassing himself this way. But he doesn't care. And he's wearing the linen ephod of a priest, even though he wasn't a priest. And he is dancing before the Lord, before the ark. And that's basically what happens. He sets it up in Jerusalem, and all is well for a period of time. This is exactly what's going on in Luke chapter 1. Luke, who is such a great artist, he's talking about the scene of the visitation, and he knows his Old Testament so well. He's very much alluding to 2 Samuel 6 when he writes about this, this scene. So just as David brought the ark to the hill country of Judea, Mary, who is really the Ark of the New Covenant, she contains in her body not the Word of God on stone tablets, but the Word made flesh, a person, Jesus Christ. She has living within her the true manna, the true living bread that came down from heaven. As Jesus will explain in John chapter 6, He is the true bread of life. And of course, He feeds us with His body and blood, His soul and divinity on our journey through the wilderness of life to the promised land of heaven. And of course, Jesus is the great high priest. Just like the staff of Aaron, the high priest that was in the old ark, Jesus, the true high priest, is living within Mary. And so really, Mary is almost a symbol of heaven itself, of course, with God living within. And so what happens? Mary goes to Elizabeth's house in the hill country. And what does Elizabeth say to her? Why is this privilege granted to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? And that's exactly what David said. He said, how can the ark of the Lord come to me? Back in 2 Samuel chapter 6. Elizabeth said with a loud cry, blessed are you among women. What did David say back in 2 Samuel 6? He blessed the people in the name of the Lord. What happened to Elizabeth? Well, Elizabeth, of course, is pregnant with John the Baptist. And when she meets Mary pregnant with Jesus, Elizabeth says, the babe in my womb leaped for joy. You know, when I heard the sound of your greeting, the babe in my womb leaped for joy. It was almost as if John the Baptist was dancing within the womb of Mary. And this is exactly what David did in 2 Samuel chapter 6. He was dancing before the old ark. Mary stays for how long at Elizabeth's house? For 3 months, which is exactly how long the old ark stayed in the hill country of Judea. So it's very, very clear that this is what Luke is trying to point out. So the early church fathers, this theme was all over their writings, that Mary was the Ark of the New Covenant. And it also shows, really, the doctrine of the Assumption as well. St. John Damascene was a father of the church who was really, really strong on this. He once preached a homily about Revelation 12 on the feast day of the Assumption. And here's what he said, and I quote, this day the holy and singular virgin is presented in the sublime and heavenly temple, this day the sacred and living ark of the living God, who bore within her womb her own creator, took up her rest within that temple of the Lord that was not made with hands. And David, her forefather, and her father in God, dances with joy. End of quote. So that's just a beautiful little quote from St. John Damascene about how all of this fits together. Just as David brought the ark to Jerusalem, Christ brings the new ark, Mary, into the glory of heaven, which is really the new Jerusalem by means of her assumption. So Barber points out in his commentary as well, really what you have in heaven is three people assumed into heaven in that you see in Revelation 11 and 12. Because if those two witnesses back in chapter 11 are really representing Moses and Elijah, who are both taken up into the glory of heaven, Mary was also assumed into heaven. So chapter 11, chapter 12, we've got Moses, we have Elijah, and we have Mary in heaven. Now, let's look at the text of chapter 12 specifically here. Let's look at verse 1. It says, "A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars." And then in the very next verse, in verse 3, it says, "Another sign appeared in heaven, a great red dragon." So what do we got here? We've got signs here, symbols. And the way that John is writing his text in Revelation, he's using symbols here to talk about earthly and heavenly realities. And this is exactly what John does in his gospel as well. John's gospel is in many ways a gospel of signs. You know, the miracles of Jesus are always called signs. And John is represented, remember, by the eagle. His gospel is represented by the eagle because he's got such a high theology. He's able to give us heaven's perspective on earthly events. So this is what he's going to do in Revelation chapter 12. He's going to take a look at some signs and images to point out some incredible truths. So this woman represents a couple different things here. Obviously, it's Mary. We know that. We just talked about that. But the woman also represents Israel, or at least the faithful Israelites that still remain. And this is why we see the sun, the moon, the 12 stars with respect to the woman. If you look at Genesis chapter 37, it talks about Joseph, the patriarch. Joseph dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I have dreamed another dream. And behold, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me." So that's in Genesis chapter 37. Verse 9. So this is, you know, these 12 stars obviously symbolize the 12 tribes of Israel. Another image. So we have this woman as Mary. We also have her as symbolizing daughter Zion. Okay. Israel itself. And in the Old Testament, Israel is described in many ways as a woman in labor. And it's true that, you know, Jesus is born out of Israel as well as specifically from Mary, who is a model Israelite woman. And we see that in the book of Isaiah, chapter 26, verse 17, it says this, "Like a woman with child who writhes and cries out in her pangs when she is near her time." Okay, so it talks about this woman in Revelation 12 who is in labor pains, who is going to give birth to a son, and that son is going to rule the nations. And that's exactly what it says in Isaiah as well. In Isaiah 66, verse 7, it says, "Before she was in labor, she gave birth. Before her pain came upon her, she was delivered of a son." So this woman is a symbol of Israel, daughter Zion. She is also quite literally Mary, who is the mother of Jesus. And also she is the new Eve. And of course, we know that one of the titles of Mary is the new Eve. In the book of Genesis, chapter 3, and this is really what's known as the proto-evangelium, or the first gospel, as soon as humanity fell into sin, this original sin of Adam and Eve, God promised that he would send a redeemer. And we see this in Genesis, chapter 3, verse 15. "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed." Now, obviously, God is speaking here to the serpent. I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. Or, you know, the seed of the woman will crush the head of the serpent. And even though, you know, the serpent will sort of hurt this Messiah, this promised Messiah, or seem to have hurt him, he is going to crush the head of the serpent. And this is really what happened during the passion and death of Christ. You know, the serpent thought that he had dealt Jesus a death blow, but in fact he did die. But he wasn't banking on the resurrection. He wasn't betting on that. God brought him back to life, and Jesus did have the final victory. And really, this is what's talked about in Revelation chapter 12. Interestingly enough, there was a reading which might have resulted from a scribal error, a copyist's mistake, where it says, "He shall bruise your head." In some translations, it actually says, "She shall bruise your head." This is from the Latin Vulgate. Now, where did this come from originally? I don't think that's the original reading, but it does represent a powerful truth that Mary does participate with Christ in the redemption. Okay, so again, we've got two signs here in Revelation 12, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, on her head, a crown of 12 stars. She was with child, and she cried out in her birth pangs in anguish for delivery. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems upon his heads. So one of the things that we read about the serpent that we can really relate to the Old Testament, this great dragon, is that there was this mythical creature in the Old Testament known as the Leviathan. And in Psalm 74, verse 14, it says that this Leviathan had many heads. We see this in this verse. "You crushed the heads of Leviathan. You gave him as food for the creatures of the wilderness." Psalm 74, verse 14. So this was seen as a great enemy of God and as a symbol of Satan in the Old Testament. And we also see, by the way, in these cities that Revelation was written to, the seven churches of Revelation, there was a pagan snake god named Asclepius that was worshipped in some of these places. So that is in the background here too. But of course, in John's view, the dragon is the devil, this ancient serpent who in Genesis tricked Adam and Eve into sinning. John's readers of Revelation as well would have recognized in pagan mythology a lot of similar images, but John is taking those and he's applying them to the truth. There is a story in Egyptian mythology about the goddess Isis, who, by the way, she had the sun around her head. She gave birth to Horus, and then the red dragon named Typhon sought to kill her, but she escaped to an island. And then what happens? Her son overthrows, defeats the dragon. There's a Greek version of the same story, in which the son that is born is actually the god Apollo, who eventually becomes strong enough to kill the dragon. Now, it's very interesting in light of the book of Revelation, because in the Roman mindset, there was a goddess called Roma who gave birth to Apollo, the sun god. And a lot of the Roman emperors thought of themselves as being basically Apollo. And when they minted coins, they had themselves sort of portrayed as Apollo. Now, John takes this imagery and he says, no. What's going to happen here is that Mary is going to give birth to the Lord Jesus Christ. He will slay the dragon and the beast. The emperor, the Roman emperor, is in fact simply one of the puppets of the dragon. So, John is here taking imagery that's very familiar to his readers from both pagan mythology and the Old Testament, and he's applying it to what's really going on here with Christ, with Mary, and of course, they're teaming up to defeat the devil. All right, now look at verse 3 in Revelation chapter 12. When it talks about the red dragon, he has 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems upon his heads. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to bear a child, that he might devour her child when she brought it forth. So what's going on here with this tail sweeping down a third of the stars of heaven? As we've already seen in the book of Revelation, stars are symbolic of angels. So really what's going on here is if the serpent's tail sweeps down a third of the stars, basically he means to say that the devil has taken with him one third of all the angels, and they've become fallen angels just like him. But he is the leader of these fallen angels who have become demons. How do we know this? Well, he has seven heads, and again, seven is the number of perfection in the Bible. So he is the chief leader of all of these demons. He has seven diadems or seven crowns upon these heads, again, showing that he is in charge of them. And they have been cast down upon the earth. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4 also speaks about the fact that demons and Satan himself are in fact fallen angels. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, it says, "For if God did not spare the angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of deepest darkness to be kept until the judgment." So we have that as well. Now, the fact that the devil is depicted in Revelation 12 as being red in color is an interesting image too. Don't forget, who tried to kill Jesus? Now, in Revelation 12, this dragon is seeking to devour the child as soon as he is born. Who tried to kill Jesus when he was an infant? It was, of course, King Herod, Herod the Great. Edom actually means red. And Herod was known as an Edomite. And we can see this in Genesis chapter 25. It talks about the Edomites, who are actually descendants of Esau, who had red hair, as he was very well known for this. So Herod was actually an Edomite. So the dragon actually could have some connotations to the fact that Herod the Edomite, or Herod the Red, tried to kill the infant Jesus. What happens? Well, the Holy Family escapes his wrath by fleeing to Egypt. In the same way, in Revelation 12, the woman takes the child and flees into the wilderness.